Many nonprofit organizations rely on their direct marketing, and more to the point, their donors who give through direct marketing channels. Mm-hmm. So direct marketing is important to nonprofits because of the amount of revenue that comes in, because of the unrestricted nature of that revenue. So there's always some sort of economic roller coaster, and direct marketing has some predictability even through that. Social media is a great place to find new audiences and start to talk about, educate on the mission, on the work that you're doing, as well as your...
Hello and welcome to the Growth Genius series brought to you by DMA Asia and InfiDigit. My name is Shelley and I'm the host of this series. Today, our guest speaker is Shannon McCracken. Shannon is founding CEO of the Nonprofit Alliance, an association that was launched in 2018 with unprecedented support to promote, protect, and strengthen the nonprofit sector. She was named to the Nonprofit Times Power and Influence Top 50 in 2022. Prior to her role with TNPA, Shannon spent 2 years as Charity Navigator's Chief Development Officer, facilitating communication with nonprofit organizations and dramatically increasing resources to ensure successful implementation of a new strategic plan. She now serves on Charity Navigator's Board of Directors. Shannon also served as a DMA Nonprofit Federation Advisory Council Chair and chairs of the Ethics Committee. Welcome, Shannon.
Thank you, Shelley. It's a pleasure to be here.
So Shannon, please tell us a little about your professional journey and how you started with nonprofit industry. How did you develop your interest in this?
Absolutely. Well, you covered a lot of my resume journey. I will say the way I started with the nonprofit sector was really coming out of college and wanting to do something in the advertising world. I mean, that was really my interest when I was 22 years old. And I was really fortunate in my first role to be not quite in advertising and direct marketing, which I didn't know a lot about, and working for nonprofit clients. And just the bug bit me. And I loved what I was doing. I loved the data component of it, blended with the creativity. It just really, both sides of my brain were challenged. And this added bonus, right, of working in the nonprofit and the social impact space. And so my second job was actually within Special Olympics, within a large nonprofit organization. And I thought I would stay there for a couple of years and learn the ropes. And I stayed for 17 years. And it was because of the challenging work that we were doing that constantly changed. We kept raising the bar for ourselves and what we were looking to accomplish. I worked with really wonderful people and then the mission itself. So when it was time to move on from that, as you said, I was looking for something that was a little bit more kind of 10,000 foot level for the sector and how I could think about the health and sustainability of the sector overall. And so that landed me a really fantastic opportunity with Charity Navigator for a couple years. And then I was invited to come in and help launch this new association for nonprofit organizations and companies that work with nonprofits. And so it's just been a really unplanned, but like rolled out beautifully sort of journey.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. So direct marketing has always been a substantial part of nonprofit fundraising programs. We hear much more about large gift donors, foundations, events, and corporate support. In the digital age, how important is direct marketing to nonprofits?
Oh gosh, it is incredibly important to nonprofits. So many nonprofit organizations rely on their direct marketing, and more to the point, their donors who give through direct marketing channels. For more than half, sometimes upwards of 70 or 80% of the organization's revenue. And importantly, the direct marketing revenue and the contributions that come in from everyday givers, people like you and me, and you know, caring about this abundance of organizations, that tends to be unrestricted money, which means that it is up to the organizations of how to spend it where most needed to serve their purpose and their mission. And that often isn't the case for those mega gifts that you mentioned that we see in the headlines or for corporate and foundational giving. Mm-hmm. So direct marketing is important to nonprofits because of the amount of revenue that comes in, because of the unrestricted nature of that revenue, and because direct marketing is by its nature, a crowd force, right? Many, many thousands, for some organizations, millions of donors who every year are supporting this particular organization. That provides some stability and predictability for organizations, even during some of the economic roller coaster, like we've lived through for the past couple of years, but I think we live through it cyclically, right? So there's always some sort of economic roller coaster, and direct marketing has some predictability even through that.
Great. So what are some of the challenges nonprofits face with effective marketing?
Now, I would say one of the biggest challenges most recently, specifically of direct mail right now, are the rising costs. So everybody, regardless of sector, if you're in direct marketing, you're in direct mail, you know what I'm talking about. The postage and the paper and the production and processing costs, all of those have gone up considerably. Charitable giving hasn't necessarily kept pace with that. So it's more expensive to just raise the same amount of money or engage with the same number of donors. And yes, organizations are growing portions of their revenue are coming from digital and other channels, but direct mail is still the workhorse. And so those costs, some of those labor challenges and supply chain challenges, and that has really stretched nonprofit organizations through these last couple of years.
So another channel which plays a very important role is social media, but it is crowded with so many messages. How can a nonprofit organization stand out on social media?
Oh, that's a good question. It comes down to authenticity, always. So I'm going to generalize here. Hopefully I don't get myself in trouble, Shelley. But if we think about for-profit companies, we think about retailers and other corporations, they are messaging for one, here's my generalization, one audience. They're messaging to the people who are currently or are most likely to buy their products and services. They can create a lot of goals and a lot of messaging and their voice around that particular audience. Mm-hmm. Whereas nonprofits have to think, we have a couple different audiences in the social media space. We have the people who are benefiting from the work that we do, from our missions. We have the people who are supporting the organization through charitable giving and otherwise. And sometimes those audiences overlap and sometimes they don't. So variations of how exclusive those two are. Nonprofits have to strike that right balance so that their messaging speaks to both of those, speaks to their strength and their impact and their ready and willingness to step up for their beneficiaries, and also speaks to the great need and the importance of donors. And sometimes those two voices are a little bit hard to balance. So I think where nonprofits can really stand out in social media is finding that authentic voice. And then here's the little piece I would add to that is making sure that that voice is consistent with the way an organization is presenting itself everywhere else, right? So social media is a great place to find new audiences and start to talk about, educate on the mission, on the work that you're doing, as well as your brand. And sometimes it's really tempting to kind of meet the standard of a particular social media platform, like talking to you, TikTok, so that the organizations want to shape their voice to be that. But if that voice doesn't show up anywhere else in their presence, including their website and other social media platforms, then it's going to be hard to hang on to that audience, right? Certainly hard to hang on to them anywhere other than the little TikTok or, that platform's bubble. I'll add one more thought to that is the social listening piece. The feedback loop that social media naturally creates is such a great opportunity, great place for nonprofits to do a little bit of social listening, see how people are talking about them. We can do all the work we want on trying to shape our brand and present it out into the world and have people interpret that the way we want them to interpret it. But ultimately, perception is reality. So where do our donors, where do our audiences expect our organization to show up? Where are they looking for us to have a voice in some of the social justice or the current news topics that are happening? Where are they looking for us to appear? How are they praising us and not praising us, and really doing some of that social listening and reacting and adapting to that?
Very interesting. So you were telling me that the number of households giving to charity every year is declining. That's also somewhat surprising. So what do you think? Why is it happening?
Yes. So Indiana University and the Lilly School of Philanthropy there reported that in 2018, for the first year, the number of charitable households dropped below the 50% mark. Now, this was not a like falling off the cliff anomaly year. This trend has been coming for 20 years. You know, we were at like 66, 67% of households in at the turn of the century. And then two decades later, we dropped below 50%. So it has been a long, slow downward crawl. But somehow falling below that particular number really caught people's attention, made a lot of headlines, made leadership, nonprofit executives take pause and pay attention. So why is it happening? A lot of factors. Again, when it's been happening for that long, there are probably many factors in play. We can talk about three of them. You know, one is generational differences in giving. So when I started in the fundraising world, my grandparents were alive and charitable, and they had a sense of duty to give because that was just their moral upbringing. And they had a sense of loyalty to particular organizations. So maybe it was because that organization touched them in some way, benefited them. It was the organization their family had always supported. But there was this commitment to give loyally every year or on a very regular basis. If you look at and there are very few of that generation continuing to give as we look at the overall breakdown of our donors. You look at the youngest donors who are coming up now, they don't have that same sense of loyalty to a particular organization. They're very passionate around a cause, but not necessarily an organization. And there are lots of ways to support a cause. It could be spread across different organizations, but it's also, you know, giving directly. So not giving through what we consider charitable giving, not through those traditional channels of through an intermediary service organization. Mm-hmm. It can be using their influence, being brand ambassadors, talking about us on social media, doing events that help support the organization, volunteering, again, activism. So habits of giving or habits of showing the way we want to support change in the world are naturally changing, and organizations have to evolve and keep up with that. And the way we measure that has to catch up with that. So I'd say that's number one. Number two, and I find this one fascinating, and we could have a whole other podcast episode on this sometime, Shelley, but it's tied to fewer people attending church services regularly. So we know that's a trend, right? We know fewer people are showing up on their day of worship and attending services. And when you think about it, the way that many of us learned to give and learned that was by watching our parents and our grandparents and our neighbors giving in a house of worship, showing up every week and, you know, passing a plate or whatever that looked like within your worship service. And it taught us that's just what we do. Whatever we have, and you don't have to be super wealthy, and you don't have to sit down and do it like only at year end. It was just something that we did. And with fewer people attending worship services and seeing that behavior and learning that behavior and weaving it into our being, some of that habit of giving has fallen away, has eroded. And giving to faith organizations continues to be the largest sector of giving when we look at the total breakdown every year. So giving to faith organizations is still very large, but it is shrinking. So being aware of that. And then I would say a third factor in the declining number of households that are giving is because households don't look the same as they did when many organizations started their donor acquisition programs. So let's talk specifically about direct marketing here. A lot of our direct marketing strategies, our control packages, our messaging and our asks and the imagery that we use and the timing, you know, all of it was built around what has historically worked. And so much of fundraising was constructed on white donors of a certain age. You know, many, if you look at donor demographics on pretty much any direct marketing fundraising file out there, they tend to be 60, 65 plus, 70 plus, you know, and so we continue to fundraise in the same way that we always have. And if we do that, then we're appealing to a smaller and smaller number of people. Mm-hmm. Households are, you know, evolving. And so it's really about nonprofits needing to remain or regain relevancy in to meet our current households, our current population, our changing demographics, to meet them where they are, and create fundraising appeals and engagement opportunities that are a good fit, are engaging and attractive and enticing and really embrace people of many different sizes, shapes, and flavors.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like you see the decline in direct marketing donors as an opportunity for fundraisers. Can you talk more about that?
I do. So on this final point where acknowledge that falling below the 50% mark is alarming, because it's for those, we rely on those direct marketing donors to keep our doors open, that is continuing to decline on a slow downward trend. So if it's just a blip, you can figure out what went wrong and fix it. But this is long-term, two decades of trends. So we see that happening. We've caught leadership's attention. We've caught executives' attention. Our CFO is paying attention, right? And we can recognize that not only are the demographics of the country changing, that's a fact, but we're in this moment of time when there is so much open conversation and acknowledgement around social justice and inclusion. And so the intersection of those two points, declining giving and really being able to talk frankly about inclusion and problems of exclusion, it's this great pivot point for organizations, for fundraisers to be leaders on making the case for long-term investment in finding ways to reach new segments of donors, donors who don't look like the people who have traditionally supported organizations in our traditional giving ways, and really opening ourselves to new and different kind of support.
Hmm. So what are some of the, let's say, top three trends, local and global, which you are seeing in the nonprofit industry? And what are your recommendations for, in, you know, for the nonprofits in the horizon of 3 to 5 years?
I would say, I don't think this first one counts as a trend yet, but maybe if we say it enough, it'll become true. I'm starting to hear more nonprofits talk about creating generalists among their fundraising teams. So for a long time, our industry has really supported development of specialists, social media specialists, somebody who specializes in monthly giving, somebody who really knows direct mail versus somebody else in the department who's focused on digital. We have all these subject matter experts. And it's great when you put all of those together as a team and everybody brings their particular expertise and you have this, all these little pieces make a complete puzzle. The challenge is when you look at any, pick out any one of those individuals, any one of those staff members, it's really hard when they are trying to advance in their career to be able to show that they're prepared to manage and lead and strategically guide something more than their little piece of the puzzle, because they don't have necessarily the right terminology around it, or they haven't managed those pieces. So when they're on an interview or an internal review and they're asked the question about something more than their piece of that puzzle, they can come up short. And it's such a disservice to our industry that we have these great subject matter experts, and yet we're not necessarily raising up people who are really ready to take on management of a whole department, for example, or a much larger team or a bigger strategy. So again, I'm hearing more organizations recognizing that. And some of it is, we do a better job of recognizing it when the job market is hard for employers, right? When there are fewer great people out there, we're really looking internally and recognizing we don't have somebody who can move into a spot that's just opened up, and we have to look outside the organization. So that's one piece, creating more generalism in our professional development for fundraisers. A second one, organizations, and I would say this is more of a trend, organizations becoming more aware of and responsive to the changes in data privacy regulations, recognizing the impact that that has now and will continue to have on direct marketing, and starting to build and implement strategies that create opportunities and reasons for donors to share, you know, first party data, to really to opt in to participate in some of that data collection and share more. And I think I keep using the word resiliency today, but that seems to be a theme for our industry right now. So that is some awareness and reaction to data privacy changes and consumer privacy concerns. And, you know, the third then, and this is a longer running trend, but just continued sophistication in multi-channel and omni-channel. We've been saying that and doing that for a long time now, but again, more sophistication, more of putting the pieces together, really thinking about how we show up and not thinking about donors or audiences in categories, really recognizing that people are existing across all of our channels. It's our channels that we've categorized, not the donors, and thinking about how that we create that consistency and that storyline and that you know, real continuation of our brand and our messaging through all of those pieces.
So another, my question was that, what do you recommend? What are your recommendations? Where should the nonprofit focus?
Recommendations. So I would recommend and support all of those trends, continuing to invest in all of those pieces, diversification and support of our profession. I might put up at the highest in that recommendation just because I'm not completely sure that it's caught on yet, but something to really, you know, really think about. We know in the nonprofit space that it is, that there's very high turnover of nonprofit fundraisers. There can be high turnover in nonprofit roles, period, hard stop. And fundraisers especially so, and different reasons for that. Sometimes it's high expectations that are difficult to meet, really looking at things and looking at budget numbers in 1 year chunks, and it's almost like a pass fail test, and there are many other factors that go in there. I mean, we could unpack all of that, but thinking about ways as senior leaders, thinking about ways that we really change some of the existing infrastructure around professional development and creating greater paths to keep people in our space. In the nonprofit fundraising world, we need future generations of really experienced, smart, direct marketers and fundraisers.
Great. So thanks for sharing. This brings us to our last segment of this episode. So let's talk about After Hours. Tell us about one passion you follow and how it helps to elevate your profession.
How it helps to elevate my profession. I mean, when you say passion, I have two teenagers. I have a daughter who's in high school and is deeply involved in the theater program. And then I have a son who plays college baseball. So my passion is I get to go be a fan to both of those. I have zero theater talent. I am, you know, don't ask me to hit a baseball. So to be able to go and watch other people, and people who I happen to think are pretty fantastic, watch them develop and show their talents and be successful and learn when they're not, you know, when they don't have great days, that is what gets me excited and how it elevates the profession. I mean, it certainly sends me back to work as a more balanced, whole person. And, you know, we all need that today.
Great. So how can our viewers connect with you, find you? Where can they find you?
Absolutely. Well, to learn more about the Nonprofit Alliance, to learn about membership in our association, to learn about the policies we work on and our upcoming programs, just come to our website, tnpa.org. And I am very findable on LinkedIn and would love to connect there.
Thank you so much, Shannon, for your insights on the nonprofit industry. The role of nonprofit in society can have ripple effects throughout the economy. Everyone benefits from the work of nonprofits in one way or another, whether they realize it or not. It's very important that they succeed. Thanks again. To all our viewers, thanks for listening. If you liked and enjoyed the show, please like it, leave a rating and review. I'll see you next time in a new episode with a new speaker. Till then, peace.